Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast that has no number.
What?
There's no number, Kyle.
I don't like this.
Katie called it numberless.
Somebody said you should call it episode 29. Fill that gap.
I don't know what you're referring to.
All the horrible things that happened on that are lost to the ages and those poor souls.
The mythological episode number 29. So this is what this is. I did my stand-up special, Funcomfortable, which aired on Comedy Central over the weekend. And it is available today on iTunes and Amazon and, you know, a lot of places where you get things.
Oh.
Where you can buy digital things. And so what's being available on, offered on iTunes is the there's an extended deluxe version, which is an hour and 15 minutes long as opposed to the 50-minute version.
One can describe it as a girthier version.
It's girthier. Yeah, there's more width and girth.
Yeah.
And then there's also a bonus Q&A on there, too. I did like a Comic-Con-style Q&A after the show. But when I was first talking to Comedy Central about this, I said, hey, I want to put my special out as an audio podcast. I just want to, you know, give it to people because, you know, people are short on cash, and I wanted, you know, it's also for if you're a subscriber listening to the Nerdist Podcast, like, hey, I want to thank you. And so I want to give you the I'm a pretty bro guy. I want to give you the opportunity to hear the comedy special. So I guess, you know, it's kind of a try before you buy. If you listen to it and you like it and you want to support it, it actually does help. Comedy Central, you know, they did pleasantly remind me that they're still that it's helpful if they're trying to sell things.
We traditionally like to make money off of things.
So, I mean, they did spend a lot of money to produce the special. So
all right,
I
internet
that.
Boy, you can put it out.
I understand that. So they said, listen, you know, can you put out the uncensored TV edit, the 50-minute edit on the podcast? And I said, sure. And they said, you know, would you be comfortable just doing that for a week? And I was like, well, all right. So that was sort of the compromise was for 1 week, you can get the uncensored 50-minute edit of Funcomfortable. Try before you buy. And then if you like it, it really would be helpful if you supported by purchasing the extended version on iTunes or wherever. But if you don't like it or you don't have the cash, no big deal. I just want as many people as possible to hear it. So listen, share it, whatever. I don't care. I just want it out there.
I just like that your comedy special now has almost as many cuts as Blade Runner.
And then over the years, there'll just
the
be more extended
cuts.
Yeah. The really director's
cut. You guys have
not
seen the one where Chris pulls out his voiceover at the beginning and then they put unicorns in it.
Yeah. And then I don't pass the Voight Kampff test. And, you know.
Chris was a replicant the whole time.
But I really do want to thank everyone. A lot of people said a lot of nice things to me over the weekend. The special was very personal to me. A lot of it helped me deal with the loss of my dad and a lot of embarrassing stories that I probably shouldn't say out loud. So I want to thank Mike Birbiglia for being the person to suggest, hey, go to a place where you're uncomfortable and write. And that's where Funcomfortable came from. And then, of course, thanking and sending a lot of love to my dad who and my mom, who both were awesome and inspirational to me. And then thanking Comedy Central for letting me do this. And thanking my friend and manager, Alex Murray, who has been amazing and instrumental in kind of helping me stay on track and help put this together.
Nice.
And, Alex was the one who said we should pitch a show to Comedy Central. And I was like, they'll never hire me. And he was like, just shut up and pitch to Comedy Central. A lot of times Alex is like, yeah, just shut up and do it anyway. Just listen to me. And I'm like, okay. So I love him and huge thanks to him. And thanks to you, the listeners, for subscribing to the Nerdist Podcast. And I hope you like it. And and again, if you don't want to support and go buy the thing, no hard feelings. If you do, great. But again, I just want as many people as possible to hear it. Here's the Nerdist Podcast. Numberless?
Comfortable.
It's not comfortable. That sounds like Seuss porn.
Uh-huh.
The cat in the cat's in the hat and my pants as well. So it's not comfortable.
Okay.
It is the Nerdist Podcast Numberless. It's not ever going to be comfortable, Kyle. Ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun comfortable.
Yeah.
No, I want you to say it the right way.
Fun comfortable.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Hashtag comfortable.
Son of a bitch. Katie, roll the special. Funcomfortable, please.
We'll be right back. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your conditioned response. It is wonderful to be here in San Francisco, California. And very kind of the audience to take a break from their required hourly protests to come to a comedy show. San Francisco, a town of technology and charity and equality, a town whose mascot should be C-3PO, a shiny gay robot who just wants to help people. A town filled with hemp shoes and hipster food trucks. Hey, it's 2 a.m. Let's go get some Vietnamese shrimp donuts. Or how about goth barbecue? Where all the meat is dark and the chicken cuts itself. The show was going great. People were excited. Everyone was having a good time. And then Chris Hardwick started off the set by saying something weird and inappropriate, like, have you ever thought about how all your moms have had jizz on them at some point? Here's the fun part. How many people came with their moms? Yay! Whee! Fun times. There they are. Oh, don't make eye contact. Awkward car ride home. It's not weird. Some of it got in. Great, you're here. Some of it got in. Good for you. You start off as a winner. It's weird, right? You never want to talk about sex with your parents. You never want to talk about it. I can tell by your body language, you never want to talk about sex with your parents. It's so strange. And then you don't. And it's not okay until, like, you're ready to have kids, right? And it's like you're married, and then they'll talk about it like it's nothing, right? Your in-laws will be like, say, when are you going to give us some grandkids? And they might as well say, when are you going to start finishing inside our daughter? I thought I'd finish on her face for a while, and I don't know, just take some time to be married, be a couple, go to Europe, I'll finish on her back in front of the Parthenon. And then when I feel really settled and I feel like my career is all in place, I'll fire my DNA inside her so she can front poop out a fuck trophy for you. I remember the moment I found out where babies come from. I remember the exact moment I found out where babies come from. I was 4 years old. I was in the back of my parents' car. My dad was driving. This is driving. this is not how I found out. come on. My dad was driving. Mom was in the passenger seat. And I just had that. I had that existential crisis that a kid has, you know? The first time you become aware, like, I was not before and now I am. So I blurt out, where do babies come from? My dad's like, I'll field this one. Well, men have a penis and ladies have a vagina. And a man puts his penis in the vagina. And a while later, a baby comes out. And I was like, okay. Follow-up question. How far in does the man put his penis? And my mom goes, I'll field this one. Slowly she turned, looking sideways at my father. She goes, not very far. So they divorced. What do you tell your kids if you're a fetishist, right? What if you're a fetishist? What do you tell your kids, huh? And there's, by the way, there's nothing wrong with being a fetishist, right? There's nothing wrong if you have a fetish. It's not like you plan it. You know, fetishes are just weird boner landmines that you trip over later in life, and you're like, oh, I guess that's what I like now. Like, you don't know where it comes from. Things happen when you're younger. No one tells you. It's not like your parents take you aside and go, Remember that harness we put on you when you were learning how to walk? That's gonna come back later. But I just imagine like a fetishist telling their kid, where do babies come from? Well, when a daddy loves a mommy very much, he dresses like a bear and eats honey out of her butt. Does he always have to chain her feet to a tree? You wouldn't be here if he didn't. By the way, I don't know if eating honey out of a butt's a thing. I was afraid to Google it. I was afraid. I didn't know. First of all, the NSA tracks all that information. I don't want that in a database somewhere. And secondly, I have this weird irrational fear that the moment I Google something really awful, like something terrible is going to happen to me, like, eating honey out of butt, my heart, dead. And then, and then someone's like, oh my God, oh my God. And the Hollywood Reporter's like, talking dead host and apparent cubby chaser, Chris Hardwick, died from the overenthusiasm he felt from looking at barely legal porn, lol, lol, lol. Fetishes, it's one of the reasons why I have such great respect for nurses. Nurses do a lot of society. Are you guys nurses? You're nurses? 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 Nurses deserve so much more respect than they get. A regular day in a nurse's life would be the worst fucking day of your entire life with the stuff they see. And I feel like they don't get credit for it, right? Because doctors get a lot of credit. Doctor, you know, like something happens, a doctor bursts in. I'm a doctor. I'm here to solve all the problems. I got a wall full of diplomas. I make a lot of money. I got a square job. Say, that guy's eyes are shitting. Nurse, get in here. Put a diaper on that guy's face. I'm going to go fuck the other nurse in a pile of opiates. The nurse has got to clean it up. People with fetishes, like for instance, whenever you meet a nurse, where's the nurse out there? What's the craziest thing you've ever pulled out of someone's butt? Broomstick, nice, nice. Did you hear how calm and measured that answer was? Broomstick, like nothing. I always ask when I meet a nurse, like, what's it, like, I was doing a show a couple weeks ago, what's the craziest thing you ever pulled out of someone's butt? And this woman goes, a light bulb, a light bulb. Light bulb! What do you say to someone when you pull a light bulb out of their butt? I have an idea. Don't pull light bulbs in your butt. You have to be very careful. You have to be very... If you're into ass play, that's fine, right? You want to put stuff in your ass? Fine, fine. But you just need to be very careful. Very careful. Because at a certain point in the insertion process... your butthole becomes very greedy, and all of a sudden, mine, and then gone. Mine, mine. Like the seagulls, mine. And some poor nurse has got to get in there and be like, Nemo! Sit out. I was doing a show in New York, and the nurses come in all shapes and sizes. There was a dude in the front row, full-on biker-looking dude, like Sons of Anarchy, leather vest, tatted up, big old beard. I go, what do you do? He goes, I'm a nurse. I go, what's the craziest thing you ever pull out of someone's butt? And he goes, my fist. But then he did not laugh to indicate that he was joking. I dated a girl once who convinced me to purchase... these Japanese animal pajamas. These full-on... Don't you fucking judge me. Listen, listen. Here's what you understand. I am relationship colorblind. All I ever see are green flags. So... she was like, we just dress up like animals. I was like, okay. So... we purchase these things. They're called Kigurumi. They're Japanese animal pajamas. People wear them to anime conventions, all right? And it's a full-on, like full-on footy tail animal head, full-on pajama type situation. And by the way, we're not fucking furries. Like, I want to make it very clear, we're not furries. We're fleecies, all right? We're fleecies. It's not sexual. We just wanted to be comfortable all night, all right? So So you go out and they make all kinds of animals and you pick your favorite one, right? You bond with one. You bond with your spirit animal. And she chose a yellow fox because it was cunning and wild and wise. And I chose a purple wolf because Prince. I don't know why. It was the last one. So I bought it and we take it home. And I was very begrudgingly like, put this on, like, what am I doing? And I get it on, and it was like the greatest fucking feeling in my entire life. It's like your entire body is hugged, is being hugged by these animal pajamas. And now I start getting into it. I'm like, this isn't so bad. I can wear am stomping around like Where the Wild Things Are, like, yay, no parents, I'm over 40. Like, I can wear animal pajamas if I want to, it's not a big deal. I'm a grown man. I earn my own money. Fuck it. Hey, maybe I'll buy a race car bed. That's not weird either. I can buy a race car bed. I'll prove it's not weird. Ladies, you would fuck a guy in a car. Great. The car's parked in my bedroom. And it has a mattress in it. So get out of my dreams and into my car. You know, we get these on, super exciting. We ordered food, it's gonna be delivered. She had this small little chihuahua dog, a little chihuahua, a chihuahua, and adorable, but not like one of those pushed in face chihuahuas. Like, he looked like a miniature deer, like a perfect little deer. Imagine if a regular sized deer pissed off a witch and she just went tiny and then shrank him down. Pocket deer. So he's jumping around. We're jumping around, all excited. All of a sudden, the doorbell rings. I'm like, the food's here! I'm gonna hide in the kitchen! Because I'm not ready. Not ready to go public yet. She didn't care. She went to the front door because she was 24. I was going through some shit! So she went to get the food. I'm hiding in the kitchen like a fucking toddler, just like hiding inside this animal pajama thing. She's getting food. All of a sudden, I hear a scream and a crash from the front of the apartment. And apparently, the chihuahua had a seizure. I know, because he's a chihuahua. And they knows everything can kill him. He knows. That's why they're shaky all the time. They're at the bottom of the food chain. They are less attack dogs and more panic attack dogs. And he knows this. So he just got overloaded. He heard the doorbell, saw a stranger, smelled food, and was just like, ah, blue screen. He's out. He's down. And we gotta boot him in safe mode or unplug him and count to 10 till we can escalate to a supervisor. I don't know, but he's out. He's out. She's crying, freaking out. The poor delivery guy can't leave because no one has signed the credit card receipt yet. No one. And that apparently is the most powerful magic known to man. Until someone signs the contract that releases him from the spell that binds him to our property, he is forced to watch a grown woman dressed like a fox crying in a puddle of soup next to a spasming chihuahua. When all of a sudden, from around the corner, a giant grape prince wolf who forgot what he was wearing comes screaming into the room. What did you do to my group? I didn't do anything. Why is she crying? I don't know why she crying. What did you do to the dog? I didn't know. Rah, 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 rah. This is what it sounds like when doves cry. So so now we're just all in a thing that no one knows how to get out of. So we're all just staring at each other. So I attempt to use comedy, which never works in real life situations. Never. But she was dressed like a fox and I was dressed like a wolf. So I looked at the guy and I go, don't just stand there. Help our son. That's the curse of the comic, is that you always you always say stuff in life and it's fine for the stage, but it never works in real life. Never works. But inappropriate humor is important. I feel like people are too easily offended now. Comedy is so important. It's a defense mechanism, you know? It's comedy is armor to protect us from the smoldering shit witch that is life sometimes. It helps us connect with other humans. It helps us subvert power. It helps us deal with tragedy. My dad died a couple years ago. Whatever, that was the end of the show. Thanks, good night. Whoa, what happened? Why? Hey, he told some jizz jokes and said his dad died and he took off. Yeah, I'm in Dead Dad Club. It's okay. You can talk about it. Like, it's okay to make jokes about it. And if you're in it, you understand. The initiation fee is one dead dad. That's how you get in. You can also be grandfathered in. see, those are the kind of jokes you can make if you're in Dead Dad Club. And if you are, you understand what I'm talking about. They know. Because literally the day I found out my dad died, I was in a heap on the floor, right? Very upset. My girlfriend at the time came over. She was like, oh my God, sweetie, is there anything I can do? 3 hours after I found out, I could not stop myself from going, my dad always wanted us to have butt sex. Because you get a window. Where the world is your sympathy, genie. It didn't work, though. She just looked at me very flatly and goes, all right, turn around. I don't think this is what he meant. I don't think this is what he was talking about. I didn't say stop. That's the thing you hear a lot when someone dies. Is there anything I can do? And I know the intention is good, but you just get tired of hearing it verbally because then you're dealing with other people's feelings, you know? You're dealing with other people's feelings, and it kind of gets to a point where it's not fair. Because there's no word in our language that expresses the idea of, I feel sorry for you, I wish I could help you, I cannot, I will take my leave. There's no one word that condenses all of that. Like, you're not sad in a room and someone comes in and they go, flarb, and you go, flarb, and then you never have to see them again. Is that my dad's funeral? Like, my dad's funeral parents, like, is there anything I do? Finally, to make it stop, I just started grabbing people and going, will you bring my dad back to life? And I just stare at him like I was waiting for something to happen. Call him a couple days later. How's that thing going we talked about? You said anything. Very serious. Like, it's not a celebration of life. It should be a celebration, right? It should be fun. Like, I don't, like, when I die, please do crazy shit. Like, dress me like a lobster, fill the coffin with ice, make it a shrimp bar. I don't give a shit. I'll be dead. Give everyone a marker, draw dicks on my face. I don't care what it is. Turn me into biofuel. In life, Chris Hardwick was a douchebag, but in death, he got us to Vegas. Like, I don't care. Have fun. We should have had fun. Like, you know, we could have dressed my dad up like a zombie, give everyone crossbows. Like, have a fucking good time. Make it a funeral. Let's make it a funeral. You know what costs $20,000 to bury a person in this country? 20 grand. Just to bury, I know, because it's a fucking scam. Because they know you got to do it. You can't keep a body at your house. That's not legally acceptable. You have to put them in properly zoned earth, and the price tag is $20,000. And that's ridiculous. My dad was awesome. He was a funny guy. He's a good dude. There were so many better ways we could have sent him off for $20,000. I figured out a few. For 20 grand. For 20 grand, we could have purchased a 2010 E-Class Mercedes, paint purple flames on the side, put him in the driver's seat, cinder block on the accelerator, drive him into a fireworks shack, boom, 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 and then have it spell out something funny like, I hope there's pussy in heaven, or something fun. For 15 grand, I could have chartered a jet to fly halfway across the country, and then right as we got over the Grand Canyon, I could have dressed him up like Batman and pushed him out of the plane. And with the remaining $5,000, hired Sugar Ray to play, I just wanna fly, like right as he's cresting the clouds. The most unbelievable part of that story is that it would cost you $5,000 to hire Sugar Ray. And that was good 90s music. Like, there was a whole period from, like, 93 to 2003 of just like, yeah, more, yeah. The fuck were we doing in the 90s? They weren't even saying words. Like, how do you write that song? What rhymes with meh? Yeah. We couldn't make words like all the, oh yeah, it's been a while since I've been a soul man, Lord, oh yeah, it's been a while. I figured out what that music was. I figured out what all that, like, whoa, all that soul yodeling, whoa, yeah, bro. I figured out what all that is, right? That was for dude bros. The 90s gave rise to the dude bro, the frosty tip barbed wire tattoo dude bro that would coalesce and become Guy Fieri. was the birth of that dude. And the dude bro can't express his emotions, so he just needs something to let his lady know how I feel. So he just, like, chuck a stain CD at her and be like, this is how I feel. If my dick could write a poem, it'd be this song. All 90 songs were just dick poems. That's it. So if you think about it, if your dick could sing, it lacks the articulating musculature to form consonants. So everything would sound like, just so you don't think I'm a monster, and let you know that my dad would have been cool with all this stuff. He loved when I talk about him on stage, and it's totally... My dad had as filthy of a sense of humor as I had. My dad was like the head vampire of filth. Well, I was performing in Tennessee, and we all went to dinner after the show. It was my dad and siblings and my stepmom, who I call bonus mom. we all went out to dinner, and my father, after 6 or 13 beers, decided to start telling everyone at the table how to go down on a lady. If you're not laughing, you're being disrespectful of my father's memory right now. Do you understand me? Nobody asked that question, by the way. Nobody asked that question at that point. All I said was like, should I get an appetizer? And he's like, I'll tell you what to eat. And then it just got gross. In graphic detail. Explaining the topography of this region on a lady and how to navigate it, like he's Vigelin. We're just getting more and more uncomfortable, like, should we order? And he goes, all right, listen, when you're with someone new, you gotta dip a finger in and take a sample so you know what you're in for. I saw the waitress behind him do this. And then we just never saw her again. I was like, Dad, please. And he goes, hear me out. Hear me out? You're not establishing democracy. That is just a bridge from I just said something terrible to it's about to get worse. He goes, it's like when someone gives you a cake, you take a sample of the icing so you know if you should have the cake. And then he sat back very satisfied with this answer. Until bonus mom jumped up in his face and goes, motherfucker, if someone gives you a cake, you eat it. Yeah. Which was a chilling window into their lives that painted my nightmares for months to come. One time, I lost my virginity. Hang on. Hear me out. To a blow-up doll. Now, your silence is very judgy. I was in high school. My friends gave me a blow-up doll as a joke, and it was hilarious when I actually had sex with it. it's such a strange thing to do, to inflate your lover. You just feel like this weird mad scientist, like, I will give you life. You will give me love. You're basically just imprisoning your breath so you can fuck it. Like, that's such a weird thing. That's such a weird thing. You're not going anywhere, breath. Like, it's such a weird thing. But I was young. I did it for science. I just want to see what would happen. So I crept into the bathroom in the middle of the night because I'm romantic. Now, I took it, her. It? Her? It. Her? Stephanie. I took it to the bathroom. There was no lock on the bathroom door, by the way. There was no lock. I know. It's a very precarious situation. My need to be inside something at that age far outweighed the risk aversion that I had. There was no lock on the door. My parents could have come in any moment, but I didn't. And there's nothing you can say. There is nothing. You cannot talk your way out of that. If they walk in, you can't be like, this isn't mine. Like, there's nothing you can say. You can't be like, help? Like, what are you supposed to say? So I reasoned that if I was caught in the middle of the night doing this disgusting thing, that I was not going to try to talk my way out of it. And you shouldn't either. If you're ever caught doing something gross in the middle of the night, in the middle of the night, by a significant other or a roommate or a parent or whatever, you do not try to talk your way out of it. Listen to me. You commit to your activity, and then you say a weird non sequitur to trick them into thinking they're dreaming. Right? If my dad had come in, I would have been like, and those reports better be on my desk by 9 a.m. He'd be like, oh, right, 9 a.m. Okay. And it was a very standard issue blow-up doll, by the way. Just that standard kind of, you know, those fingerless hand mittens, like, that look on its face, that, like, you want to do what? Like, that look. The standard blow-up doll expression looks like if you're driving late at night and it's dark and someone runs in front of your car and you slam on the brakes and you almost hit them, but you don't, and they just turn and go, ooh! But in that situation, you don't go, why should you put a dick in there? Like, you don't do that. So the process starts, and it's weird, and it's squeaky, and we get about halfway through, so like a minute in, and it was my first time. We get about halfway through, and it started to deflate. Aww. 'Cause I'm huge! No, I don't know why. I don't know why. I just assume, like, oh, it doesn't want to be here either. That'd be a rad mutant power to have if you're a woman, by the way, and you instantly regretted fucking a dude. You could just be like, ugh, I'm out of here. Just watch the dude freak out. What the fuck is that? Oh my God, what's happening? What magic is this? So, it starts to deflate, and now it's a race. And I don't like to lose. So I cross the finish line right as it collected in a last plastic puddle around my midsection in a final dramatic death queef. Which would be a rad name for a band, I think we'll all agree. I don't know what it is. Probably German, probably all tubas. Hello, Munich, we are Death Queef!
I'm Spain Day!
That's the only thing you can play on a tuba. So I finish, like, and then I have that instantaneous moment of awareness that a man gets the second after he has completed the prime directive. And now I feel bad about myself. I feel bad. Because I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know who... There wasn't an internet at the time. I didn't know who I could talk to. Is this weird? Is this strange? You know, am I broken? Am I broken inside? I carried this around for so long. I'm like, what is my life going to be? Am I going to be just, like, cranking it to the Macy's Day Parade? Like, fuck yeah, underdog. Like, what? What's going to happen? I thought I was broken for the longest time. Until I was on stage in Nashville, Tennessee. A couple of years ago. First time I tell that story on stage, I go, one time I had sex with a blow-up doll. My dad from the audience, me too! We're connecting over this? Why wouldn't you warn a person? That's hereditary? Like, it was such a strange... Like, I may have a kid someday. Now I gotta watch him like a hawk. Hey, face up on the raft, Kyle. I know what you're doing. Yeah, don't even try. I did. Like my father and his father before him. And his father before him, who used to have to fuck a pile of rocks uphill both ways to school in the snow. This is my legacy. This is my legacy. You wouldn't know this from looking at me. My mother, I'm half Italian. My mother is Italian and Native American. My mother is Italian and Cherokee Indian. And I look like a Tumblr page of ranch dressing recipes. I look like this. And it's because of my dad's jeans. My dad's jeans are just Tennessee redneck hobo billy as far back as you can see. And so my redneck jeans are doing what they do best, which is to suppress all the minorities in my body. Something that happens in the South and the Midwest that doesn't happen anywhere else, and I love it. It's when you go to a restaurant and the server brings you their food, they go, "Holler if you need anything else," and they walk away. And I'm always so tempted to wait 5 minutes and then go, "Ah!" "Could I get some ketchup?" "I was just hollering as per our agreement from earlier." People are very vocal on social media. I still like social media. I've sort of built my life, my career at midnight, like everything. Podkinner's podcast, everything's built on social media. I love social media. It's great. Still like Twitter a lot. Twitter is a very powerful tool because Twitter will answer any question that you throw at it. Any question. For instance, before I come to a town like this, I'll go, "Hey, Twitter, where's a good place to get donuts in San Francisco?" And Twitter will respond, "Fuck you, Daniel Tosh rules." It doesn't necessarily answer the question you ask it, but it will answer. Social media is really great if you're tired of sane conversations or you're feeling too good about yourself. I get trolled a lot, too, and I'm fine with it. I get it. I know I get it. I'm trollable, douchey white guy. I get it. Purposely messed up hair, tight pants. My TV, I know I can be irritating. My TV energy is like if you soaked SpongeBob in cocaine water, right? I get it. Yeah, everything's great. I know. I'm aware. And my design aesthetic could best be described as hipster lesbian on a first date. Yeah. Gay in the streets, straight in the sheets. Metrosexual. So I get trolled a lot. I have this crusty outer sea crest shell. But I have this chewy Bill Nye center that loves science and reason. I know. Well, the thing with trolls, you cannot feed that. I've been online since 1993. I've been online. I feel like I've done my best to learn, but it's still very difficult, right? But you have to understand, most trolls are basically like 13-year-olds who are like, "I'm unattended," and that's it. That's it. You're fighting with children. You're fighting with children. So here's what I say to the 13-year-olds. If you want to troll me, that's fine. You want to tell me I'm a dumb piece of shit, that's fine. Guess what? I'm not going to fight you on your battleground anymore. You troll me, I will fuck your mother. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't mean that in a figurative gaming forum type sense. Like, I will all caps fuck your mom IRL. I could. She's probably my age. She probably watched Singled Out. I could totally fuck your mom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Real hard up against the wall to your bedroom until your bunk bed shakes and you gotta stifle the noise with your Adventure Time backpacks or Minecraft plushies or whatever the fuck. Then I'm gonna be your stepdad. I'm gonna take away your fucking laptop. You're grounded. I used to get real upset about stuff online. I'm sensitive. Most comics performers are sensitive. We're sensitive, you know? We were probably rejected when we were young. I certainly was. And we have insecurities, and people do poke at those insecurities, and we're just human. So it's hard, you know, when people say shit to you online, you internalize it. It pokes at all your insecurities. I get stressed. I don't know if I'm doing a good job in life or not. I do the best I can. My dad had the best philosophy. My dad had the simplest philosophy. I was so jealous of it. Said this to me in the last year he was alive. He goes, "I was stressed with someone. I was like, yeah, it's just work and it's online and I don't." And he goes, "Hey, I'll tell you, buddy, any day you can take a shit's a good day." That's it. He lived life pass or fail. I am not comfortable with this analogy. I am not a comfortable pooper. I don't like it. I get red face even talking about it. I get embarrassed. I cannot go in public. I will not go in public. If my body starts rumbling, I will fight my body. Like, you stay in there. You're not, you work for me, asshole. Like, I get aggressive. I feel like I understand dogs in this arena. I understand dogs, right? A dog knows. Your dog knows that outside is for pooping. He knows outside is pooping. But they never go right away. They have to get comfortable first, right? They go, oh, there's too many smells over here. Oh, it's too dark over here. You got to walk them all the way around the block until their body can't contain anymore. And then they convulse. And they're just like, this is happening. And then, like, their ears go back. By the way, that look of shame a dog has on its face when it's bed is the exact right look you should have. That, ah, don't look at me. No, this is not who I am. Don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. Gotta bury the evidence. And if I am in a relationship with you, you will never know what's happening. I am a stealth shitter. You will never know what's happening. Ever. I will hide that from you. I get so embarrassed. I will never cross that threshold in a relationship my entire life. So you have to know how horrible it was that one time I farted during an orgasm with a lady. I was not alone. One time I farted during an orgasm, and it was just the, like I don't know what happened. I guess my bodily functions were like, oh, I guess we're all getting out. And then, it did not, as I would have theorized as a 15-year-old, give me any kind of turbo boost. Just a quick slide into shame. There's nothing you can say in that situation. There is nothing. You can't pretend like it's intentional and be like, oh, yeah. Like, there's nothing you can say. All you can do is just get up and go, thank you for your service, and walk into a fire. Where you will explode because you're a farting gas monster. It's the kind of shit that happens when you get older. I don't know. I'm freaked out about that. You know, my brother works at a cell phone store in Tampa, Florida, so he's happy. And he sent me a text a couple weeks ago, and he goes, if another fucking elderly person asks me what is the cloud, I'm going to punch him in the throat. And I go, Eddie, the next time an elderly person says, what is the cloud, just go, shh, that's the place you're going soon. So old people are texting and they're on social media. They're trying to steal our youth essence like it's Cocoon. Like they're all up in it. And that's normally fine. I have a friend whose grandpa's 82 and her primary form of communication is text. They text each other. And it's nice because they talk more than they would normally, like if they had to call each other on the phone. But somewhere along the line, someone taught him all the like OMFGs and WTFs and it just creeps her out because it's just dissonant. You just don't want to picture your grandfather like, no, OMG, can't believe One Direction's broken up again. Like, it just feels creepy. And I said to her, like, well, you know, maybe those abbreviations don't mean the same thing to him, right? He's 82. He could be in horrible danger and just trying to get help. OMFG could be Old Man Falk. BRB, bleeding, really bleeding. WTF, Wednesday's the funeral. I had my first old man moment not that long ago. I was performing at Stanford, not that far from here. It was just about to be the 30th anniversary of my favorite movie, Back to the Future. 30th anniversary. Amazing movie, one of the best movies of all time. Everyone's seen it. Everyone loves it. And as I was kind of describing, like, hey, are you guys excited about Back to the Future? Quiet. Nothing. They just got really weird. There was nothing. And then I realized, oh, they've never seen the movie before. So I asked the fucker in the front row. I go, what year were you born? He goes, 1997. I'm like, fuck you, man. Like, now I get mad at him for something that's not his fault. How fucking dare you be born 12 years too late after the greatest movie in the history of all time. Do you understand? That'd be like when I was in college, if some creepy old guy was on stage going, Gone with the Wind was the greatest goddamn movie in the history of entertainment. Like, you little shitbags are too far up your own butts to know anything. Do you understand? Now I'm just Grandpa Gen X just shouting at them on stage. In my day, movies were about important things like time travel, and they taught us valuable lessons like always meet an old man in a mall parking lot at 1 a.m. when he asks you to bring a video camera. And when I was your age, if you wanted to see tits on the internet, you had to make them out of commas. We didn't just have boobs whenever we wanted to. Let me tell you about scrambled porn. You have to sneak down to your parents' living room at 3 o'clock in the morning and turn it on channel 942. The screen would just be all waving. You could hear noise. You just waited for it to freeze on something. You're just sitting there like a sniper waiting for a clean shot. What is that, a boob, a neck, a vagina, a butt, an elbow? My generation jerked off to more shoulders than any in the history of mankind. So I got engaged. I did. I got engaged. I got engaged to a lady who has decided to pledge her loyalty to me in the eyes of the government. Ha 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 ha. We got engaged, and we were together about a year, and we got engaged. And I knew about 6 months in. I think I knew about 6 months in that she was going to be the one. And it was really, when you're in a relationship, 6 months is about as long as you can pretend to be someone you're not, where you can hold up that fake image of yourself to another person, where you're like super cool with everything and super chill. You're like Optimus Prime. I can solve any problem. I'm going to save the galaxy. Because then after 6 months, you're just like, it takes too many Energon cubes to... You just slide into Pessimus Prime. Autobots... Why bother? My tank is always half empty anyway. So there's only so long you can hold up the fake image of yourself to another person. And if you know anything about me, you know that I've dealt a lot of my life struggling with depression and anxiety and a lot of brain things, right? So I used to be afraid of elevators and airplanes and going out in public and talking to people, like everything that you would need to live in a modern society. And I got over a lot of it. Except for... a crippling fear of heights. I have a crippling fear of heights. And it's not even, what if I fall? I have this weird little voice in the back of my head that goes, what if I jump? What if I jump? What if I jump? What if something fires? What if a synapse fires around my higher reasoning? And I'm like, I don't know why I'm doing this. And then... what if questions are the worst questions you can ask yourself? They are the worst questions. If you ever suffer from anxiety, you never ask yourself a what if question. What if questions lead to worse what if questions? And they always start with like, what if I fuck up this job interview? What if I never work again? What if I die? Like, that's how they all go. What if I say something stupid at a party? What if no one likes me? What if I die? And I got really, anxious because I can't handle driving up windy mountain roads. Cannot handle it. And my fiance Lydia and I went on a road trip 6 months in where I knew we were going to have to drive up a windy mountain road, Zion National Park in Utah, skyscraper high mountain, a mountain that was clearly like, no humans. And we're like, we'll show you, because we have to fucking stick our noses everywhere. So they built this windy two-lane road all the way up this giant skyscraper high mountain. And I was terrified. For a week, I knew this trip was coming up. She would fall asleep, and I was visualizing success. I was visualizing successfully driving her to the top of the mountain, right? Because I want to be a big, strong man and drive my girlfriend up a mountain. But it turns out I'm weak and feeble, and my girlfriend had to drive me up a mountain. Because we got like a third of the way up and just beads of sweat start forming. Beads of sweat start forming. And I start getting, and she noticed right away, right? Because anxiety is like weed. You think no one knows, but everyone fucking knows. So she's like, are you okay? I'm like, am I okay? Are you okay? Are any of us okay? I mean, we're in a large rock hurtling 1,000 miles an hour through space. We can fly. Now I'm starting to hyperventilate, and I'm trying to disguise the hyperventilation as sounds of wonderment, like. Ah, 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 ah. And now we're at the point where I can't see. My eyes are stinging with sweat, and my hands are slick. And now it's not safe anymore. Now it's not safe to be driving up. Right? Now I am the danger. So we get about halfway up, and I have to pull over. And there's a little turnabout, and I pull over. And this is a very important moment in our relationship. Because one of two things are going to happen. She's either going to be like, of course, I can drive, no big deal. Or I'm going to be like, mountain scary. And she's going to be like, pussy, and then just kick the door open. Climb the rest of the way up herself. This ain't so hard. And then I have to live there. But she was really cool about it. And she was like, oh my God, sweetie, of course I'll get you to top of them. I'm like, in my head, I was like, yeah, I found the one. Then we get to the top of the mountain. She's like, let's get out and take a picture. I'm like, I almost found the one. To get out and take a picture. And it is like, there's no, like, I can feel my stomach rooting to the ground even telling you about it. Because it's all craggy, right? There's no guardrails in nature. There's no fucking guardrails in nature. It's all craggy. And so, like, you take one wrong step and literally your last thought is, I was right to be afraid. And by the way, people are just letting their kids run up and down the sides with no. I'm like, am I the only sane person? Do you not understand? This is Darwin's shelf. I'm really lucky. I have a really cool mom. 98% of her is one of the most amazing human beings I've ever known in my life. 2%. will create a reason to worry about everything and plant it in your brain. She's the Edison of worry. She will invent a reason to worry about anything. Anything. Right? I live on a small hill, wide streets, and there was a diner at the bottom of the hill. So I was talking to my mom the other day, walking down the hill. She goes, what are you doing? Oh, I'm walking down to get some dinner. Oh, I don't think that's safe. I'm like, no, I've been walking a long time. I totally got this. It's totally fine. I'm good. Well, there's cars that come out the mouth. Yeah, I know, but they're big lumbering machines. I've made it pretty far in life avoiding cars. Like, I'm good. I'm not going to get hit. Like, it's totally fine. Well, there's coyotes in your... I know, but I'm a large, hairless, gesticulating ape. Like, I'm not a meal to them. I'm not going to... Well, they travel in packs. Like, it's not fucking West Side Story. They're not going to come out in leather jackets. Boy, boy, human boy. Rawr! Like... I go, fine, I will just build a pillow cocoon and live inside it, okay? Well, you could suffocate. Fine, I will move to a wide open forest. Well, there's bears there. I will move to a magical forest. Well, orcs then. Like, there's no way to satisfy this woman's sense of worry. So now we're just shouting at each other all the way down the hill, arguing. I get to the bottom of the hill, right as a handsome young couple walking their dog, passing by, gets to hear the talking dead guy go, I'm 43 years old, I can walk down the hill by myself if I want to, Mom. I don't know, but it's interesting, you know? When I think about legacy and I think about family, I think about what I've inherited, I think I got really lucky. But there are some things. There are some things that I'm dealing with. And now as I stand on the precipice of marriage and then kids, not that far behind, I think, what kind of a parent am I going to be, you know? I'm not even sure I can have kids. So I saw my doctor not that long ago, and he told me that my sperm was too self-centered to... foster life. We called it narcissism, and then we high-fived. What am I going to do? Like, if I'm a super anxious person, how's that going to help some kid? You know, when they're in doubt or when they're afraid of something, my kid's going to be like, Daddy, the dark is scary. I'll be like, fuck yeah, it is. You don't know what's in there. Monsters, probably. And that's just the supernatural things to be afraid of. There are tiny microscopic terrors growing inside your body that can take you out at any minute. When you're born, it's like someone sticks a pin in the side of a balloon, and your entire life is a massive attempt to distract yourself from the sound of the air escaping. Stop crying! Not to mention all the exterior things in the world, like pollution and ISIS and home invasions. I mean, if I'm thinking of it, I should probably put better locks on the doors, but let's be honest, if someone wants to get in, they're going to get in, which means I should probably buy a gun. But if I do, I'm statistically more likely to shoot you and your mother, and then guess what? More ghosts. In short, we're all going to die, everything can kill you, and you should be shitting your pants every day. But... on the plus side, any day you can take a shit's a good day. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. You are so wonderful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Enjoy your burrito. Thank you. Thank you.